Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
For tuning in today, this is Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So thanks for tuning in, and happy Thursday to you. I hope you're having a great week and a great day. I took a long hot shower after last night's debate, so I'm feeling better. It was an interesting discussion on TV. It's going to actually have a little something to do with what we're going to talk about today. Because today we're going to talk about one of the childhood games we probably all have played. It's called Tag. Do you remember that game? And remember, the goal is you have no friends, no one's on your team, and you try to avoid everybody because you don't want to be it. And that is one of the most difficult things that we do in relationships with each other is we play tag. It's fun when it's a childhood version, but the grown-up version is not at all. And in short, it's the reason for every form of wrong relationship in life. And once you understand the game, you're going to see it everywhere. And my guest today on the studio line, Dr. Glenn Pickering, is going to help us understand how that game is played and how we can spot it, identify it, and how we can avoid playing it in the future. So welcome to the show. You know, I've been to Ireland about six times, and it's funny because in Ireland they say, "You're very welcome." And that's always very disarming to me because I thought, well, what did I forget to thank you for? Because they'd walk in and say, "You're very welcome." But we just say, "Welcome." They say, "You're very welcome." Very disarming. But I want to say, "You're very welcome today." My guest is psychologist, writer, seminar leader. He knows how to use a semicolon, and he can probably, for all I know, tell the difference between butter and I can't believe it's not butter. Dr. Glenn Pickering, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, the game of tag, and I have to say, is once you understand how it's played, you do see it everywhere. And
I know. It's so true.
The minute you can call it out in your head that you're doing it, you can stop it.
Right.
And
there's a lot of power to just being able to recognize the game when you see it. That's really true.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that, watching the debate last night, it seems that you're always trying to make the other person it.
Right.
And one of the rules is, if you can prove that they're wrong, you can be as mean to them as you want to be. And that goes on in relationships all over the place, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, in fact.
All right. I want to spend the first few minutes of the show talking about the destructive effects of the game of tag. Because we play that in relationships, whether we know it or not. So lie number one is you're all alone. Talk more about that.
Right. Thank you very much. I think if you watch the little kids play at the game of tag, what you see, of course, is sort of what you mentioned earlier, is that nobody's really on your team. And so you really can't trust anybody because everybody's either the person who's it, who you have to kind of keep an eye on, but everybody else could easily become it. So you have to kind of keep your eye on everybody and you kind of keep yourself a little distant from everybody else in the game. And in adult relationships, if we're worried about being criticized or if we're worried about being judged or controlled or told what we did wrong or made to feel bad, and we're sort of always on guard and kind of expecting that that might happen, then we keep everybody in our life at a bit of a distance. We don't tell them what's really happening with us. We don't really share what we're really thinking or feeling because we don't want to get tagged. We don't want to be it. And so it's just like that little kid game where we end up keeping everybody kind of at a distance. And of course, Jesus said that the goal of marriage, for example, is that the two shall become as one, that there's this more and more and more deeper and deeper and deeper connection. Well, if in my primary relationships and in my other relationships, I'm worried about keeping everybody at a distance, see, that whole thing where I'm supposed to get closer and closer to the people in my life literally can't happen.
Mm-hmm. So, Glenn, if lie number one is you're all alone, the consequence is going to be isolation, and that's going
right.
and that's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, because a lot of people think, I'm going to end up alone if I keep this up. And the truth is, yeah, you probably
right.
will.
Right. And sometimes when people say that to me, I think, golly, there's truth to that. And I think when people are like, well, Glenn, I start to see the game now. I kind of see how it works. But breaking it out of this kind of takes work. It takes a certain amount of discipline. Why would I work that hard at something? And really, that's my answer, because if we don't, then we're going to end up with nobody in our life who's really connected to us. And that's mm-hmm. a really, really sad thought.
Let's talk about a couple of quick examples just to give our listeners
Great.
A little understanding
sure.
of this game of tag. Let's say a person's running late for a family get-together. They're a little afraid right. that the lateness of the arrival will spoil the day. So you start treating other people in the car terribly and make them it.
Right. Well, if you guys had gotten in the car on time, we
yes.
wouldn't be running late. If this traffic wasn't so bad, if somebody would have looked on the map and told me there was all this traffic, we could have left earlier. Why do they start this event so early anyway? We, yep.
you don't have to
that
make it personal.
About, right.
So that gives you a little bit of an idea how you can instantly
right.
put the blame on someone else, make someone else
right.
it, and that way
right.
you're off the hook temporarily.
Right. Right, then you're not it, right.
Yep. Then you're not it, and the goal is to not be it.
Right, you watch those little kids playing the game, somebody's it, they tag somebody else, they tag them really hard to make sure everybody knows they're not it anymore, they yell, not it, at the top of their lungs, and they run like crazy. The whole goal is to be able to say, I'm not the one, that's it.
Okay, let's get to line number two. Line number two is,
right.
I need to keep myself safe.
Right.
And the consequence is going to be distance. That sounds very reasonable.
Right. See, what I think is, if I really see everybody else as being potentially critical of me or judgmental of me or controlling of me, then really the only way to keep myself safe is to keep myself separate from those people. Now, and here's the just painful, painful reality of that. There's a Christian sociologist a number of years ago who studied the years when humans were just starting to appear on Earth. And he said about that, at about that time, there were us and about three other species who are sort of like us, all of which were bigger and stronger than us.
Mm-hmm.
But ours was the only one that survived. And as nearly as he could tell, he said, it was because we were the only one who lived in community. Because, see, we're all just too easy to pick off all by ourselves.
Yeah.
It's only a community that we're strong enough. And so if I think I'm going to keep myself isolated as a way to keep myself safe, that lie is so painful to me to even say out loud, because the one way I'm absolutely never safe is by myself.
Mm-hmm. So let's just say, for example, I don't like conflict. So if I
right.
hide in the garage and pretend I'm working on something with tools, even though I know nothing about
right.
tools, I'm in
right.
a way isolating myself, and I'm playing
right.
frozen tag, which means you can't
right.
make me it because I'm not around you.
Right, I'm not present. And I think, right, so I can even be home and still playing tag. I would actually call the game absent tag, but it's a perfect example of how we play tag.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be it. I don't want to be criticized. And so I haven't been criticized yet, so I don't need to do that other stuff we're talking about where I actively lash out and make somebody else it. I'm not it yet, so now I'm doing all the things that a kid would do at the beginning of the game when they're not it yet, all the things we do to make sure that we don't become it. And so if I have people in my family or people at work or people in my ministry who I think are going to criticize me, then I start looking for ways to not be around whenever they're at home or whenever they're at work or whenever they're at the church, so that I don't have to deal with that, because I don't want to be the bad one.
Okay. So, Glenn, maybe this might be a more appropriate illustration of frozen tag, where you say, so, are you ready for your date tonight? I suppose. Well, where are you two willing to eat? Doesn't matter.
I don't
so
care.
I'm playing
Anywhere's
safe.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm just going
to. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going
right.
to play it safe and be frozen and then not be subject to
right.
being it, because what I don't want
yep.
is to be it, is to make a suggestion
right. exactly.
and go, well, I don't want to go there. That's a stupid idea.
Right. Right. What if somebody criticizes it or judges it? Or what if we, even worse, we do go there and then it turns out to be a really terrible experience and now it's all my fault?
Yeah. Ooh, that's not going to fly well. All right. We're moving along great here. Let's get to line number
right.
three, and that is, if I praise you, I'm it. Now, that must
right.
come out of a horribly dysfunctional tag family, if that's
well,
your mentality.
Here's the really painful thing. We all live in a tag world where we have our very, very human self is really afraid of being the bad one, really afraid of being it. And so I don't lift up other people, because if I'm in a conversation with you and I really think in the back of my head one of us has to be the bad one, well, if I praise you or lift you up or encourage you or tell you how great you're doing, you're not the bad one. You're not it. And if I really, really believe that one of us has to be, well, then that means I'm volunteering for that role. That's a suicide mission.
Yeah, that is suicide mission.
Nobody's
gonna
do that. Yeah. Right. And so what you see in families that are real sharper, harsher, critical with each other is nobody gives each other compliments. Nobody gets any praise. Nobody gets lifted up for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many clients of mine in my practice here in Eden Prairie who come to me and say, Glenn, here's a capsule of my life. I was on the baseball team. I did really great. I hit 3 home runs, and I come home, and the only thing my dad said to me was, yeah, you practically tripped on the way around the bases on that last one. Like, wow. Like, what would a person have to do to actually hear that they were good enough?
Well, that's
and
sad.
All of us, yeah, if we're around people who play tag all the time, we always walk away feeling like we just can't do it right. We're just not good enough. I just can't do anything.
Right. And, of course, Glenn, that leads me into the 90-10 rule. Talk about that.
Well, what I think is in Philippians 4:8, the Apostle Paul says, whatever is good, whatever is wonderful, whatever excellent, whatever is worthy of praise, think about these things. So in life, and especially in relationships, we're supposed to look for the 90, because I think all of us do stuff right about 90% of the time. We all mess up about 10%, which is kind of how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in a relationship that works, we look for what the other person does right, what they do well, whatever is excellent or praiseworthy, like Paul says, and we lift that up. But see, if I'm in a tag-playing relationship where I just don't want to be the bad one, I literally watch for what you do wrong, and I point that out, because if you're the bad one, I'm not.
Mm.
And so instead of looking for, yeah, so the 90-10 rule is we all do stuff right 90%, we mess up 10, that's kind of a given. And the people who care for me, love me, look out for me, they're always looking for the 90. But the people who are playing tag, who just don't want to be it, who are afraid something's going to be their fault, they're always looking for the 10, and that's all they actually talk to me about.
Mm. So it literally takes a discipline to say, look, I'm going to start focusing on the 90, because the 10 comes pretty naturally. It's a lot easier to look
it's
for something
so
to be critical of.
It's so easy to just focus on what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this just happened to me the other day. This really pretty car drove by, very nice, very sharp, very well-maintained, and the hubcap on the left rear wheel was off.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, oh, that looks weird. And honestly, that's kind of the only thing I saw. It's crazy how true that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, you could have said, hey, Glenn, what color was that car? What year was it? What make? And all I can remember is it didn't have a hubcap.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, Glenn, we're going to have a lot more discussion on the game of tag and how we need to be in a right relationship with God and each other. And by eliminating tag, can help you get there. Let's take a little break when we come back. Lots more with Dr. Glenn Pickering. This is Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back. You're very welcome. See, I'm already doing it, Matt. It's like I'm back in Ireland. Instead of saying welcome, I say you're very welcome. Talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering today, we're talking about one of his several books that he's written. This one is called Playing Tag, the World's Most Common Game. And Glenn is a psychologist. He's a former chemical engineer and pastor. He's kind of done it all. I expect him to one day leave his practice and join the circus. I figure you're going to do that. But we're getting up to lie number 4, and that is, it is, and this is a big one, so we're going to take our time on this one. It's selfish to ask for what I want.
Right. That is a really wicked lie, and it's stunning to me how many Christians believe that lie.
And here's the consequence, folks, a complete lack of vision.
Right.
Ouch.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking, too, because if I believe that lie, that is wrong for me to ask what I want, that it's selfish for me to ask what I want, then I don't ask what I want. But Jesus is really clear in Matthew 7, asking, seeking shall be given unto you, knocking the door shall be opened, asking shall be given unto you. We're supposed to come before God and ask for exactly whatever it is that we want. And so if we don't do that, we're literally not doing what he asks us to do. And here's the interesting thing. This gets more and more clear to me over the years. People say, well, Glenn, it's selfish for me to ask for what I want. And then I'm going to say, well, tell me all the reasons why you wouldn't ask for what you want. And every sentence goes like this. Well, I don't want to look stupid. I don't want to look selfish. I don't want to be greedy. I don't want people to think bad of me. I don't want people to think it's all about me. I don't want to look like I need everything. I don't want to be blah, blah, blah. I don't want people to think I'm so-and-so. It's like every single one of our reasons for not asking for what we want starts with the same word, I.
Mm-hmm.
Every reason for not asking for what I want is actually really, really, literally self-centered.
Hmm.
So when people say, well, I don't want to do that thing where I say what I want, ask for what I want, I think, because that would be selfish. I think, no, not doing it is selfish.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say that tag players, people involved in this game of tag,
right,
they act as if they're too relaxed or too involved or too realistic to answer life's most dangerous question. And you've
right,
said that in the past. Life's most dangerous question is, what do you want? And the fact
right,
is, they're too scared.
Right, right. Because you know what? If I really put out there what I want, because let's be honest, the things God puts on our heart are big. God doesn't give us trivial things to work on or to do or to be. God gives us big deal things to do, important things to do, intense things to do, almost ridiculous from the worldly perspective, things to do. So if I say out loud what I believe I'm called to do, and I'm in a group of people, a family, a business, a ministry, where people are really critical and judgmental, boy, am I going to get bad feedback about that. Oh, yeah, like you're so important. What makes you think you could do that? Blah, blah, blah. So we say we don't claim our vision because we don't want to be selfish, but we really don't want to claim our vision because we're scared that we're going to get criticized, mm-hmm, judged, told that that's stupid. And to be honest, the things God puts on our heart are pretty big. It's all true.
Mm-hmm. I think we're,
so if we're around some critical people, that gives them plenty of things to be critical about.
Mm-hmm. I think we're rattling some cages today because there's people listening thinking, oh, my goodness, I live in fear of criticism. I live
right,
in fear of doing something wrong or being told I didn't do it right or I could have done it.
Right.
I could have done it better. And it gets it keeps you passive, doesn't it?
It keeps you passive. And I think all the time, sometimes people come up to me and say, Glenn, I hear you talk about spiritual warfare now and then. I don't really ever experience that. And I think, oh, that's too bad. Because that means you are literally on the sidelines. You're afraid to claim your vision, so you don't do your vision. You don't live outside your small little world. And so, of course, you never, you know, Satan never has to feel like he has to come up against you because you're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we talk about our vision, we'll talk about it in such small, little, trivial ways. Like, you know, this probably sounds stupid, but one day I'd like to. Almost like we're sheepishly.
Like we're apologizing for the vision.
Yeah. When actually God wants us to be bold with our vision. And
that's
hopefully
what I think. We should apologize for not doing it.
Right. Okay. Let's get to lie number five. We did a nice job with that. Lie number five is we always kind of need to know whose fault it is. And,
right.
You know, it's
right,
like, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? I've heard that expression before.
Right.
And
for me, because I work with people on relationships all the time in my practice,
mm-hmm,
what I see is I can either be right or I can be in right relationship.
Mm-hmm. So say more about that.
Well, if I have to be right, sort of quote unquote, and people say, oh, Glenn, I just had this need to be right. And I think, no, see, here's the deal. You don't have a need to be right. You have an overwhelming fear of being wrong.
Okay, that's a little heady.
Yeah.
Say that again.
Let's say I'm one of those people, I always got to get the last word in because I got to be right. I promise you, my last word, whatever sentence I say, is never about being right. It is always about making it very clear to the other person that they're wrong or stupid, that their idea will never work, or that they're selfish, or something that makes it really clear, no, you are the bad one,
mm-hmm,
not me.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I say I can't play that game and be in right relationship because playing that game will literally, over time, destroy every relationship I'm in. So I can either play that game where I think I'm being right when really I'm just trying to make somebody else wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can be in the right relationship, but I can't do them both, because once I start playing that game, it will kill all of my relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly, gradually, over time, people just don't want to spend time with me.
And there will be a lack of resolution in that relationship. Correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Because, see, if here's how I know when people say I have to be right, that they really just don't want to be wrong. They're afraid of being wrong. Two people, let's say me and you are kicking around a day that you should have me on your show, and we're really trying to be right. We don't make each other wrong. We're really just trying to be right. You're going to list some days that would work for you. I'm going to list some days that would work for me, and we're just going to figure out, you know, okay, great, what would be the best day? And that's going to take us about a minute and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're really trying to be right, really and truly, we'll get through that very quickly. We'll come to a nice answer. We'll both think that seems good, and then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But see, if really we're just in a conversation where I don't want to be wrong, every sentence I say doesn't lead us closer to resolution. It's just like, no, you're wrong. Honestly, it's like if there are like a couple of four-year-olds in a room and they're fighting. And so mom comes in and says, hey, what happened? And the first one says, he pushed me. And the second one says, but only because you took my toy. The person says, yeah, but only because before that, you took the thing I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so they just go back and forth talking about whose fault it is. And, of course, it's always yours, not mine. And so all they do is go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, making the other one the bad one. They not only don't get to resolution, it's not even on the table.
Mm.
So they will never get to resolution. So nothing ever actually gets finished, which means that icky conversation we just had now or that argument we just had now is going to come up again tonight or tomorrow or next week because we never actually resolved it because we just got stuck in talking about whose fault it is. And so what happens then is over time we notice, geez, we're having the same arguments over and over and over again. We have the same icky conversations over and over and over again.
Mm. But if they
because they never get resolved. We never get
right,
to the finish point.
Right. But if you're still looking for resolution and you keep revisiting it in hopes of resolution, but you don't
right.
get it, how do you
right.
break that cycle of insanity?
That's a really, really great point. So here's my first thing I usually try and teach people who feel like, Glenn, that's us. We have those icky conversations back and forth and back and forth. I think, okay, great. The first way to break out of that is to replace the word you with the word we. And here's what I mean. So let's say my wife and I or my colleague and I or who knows what, we're in one of those conversations where, you know, we go back and forth, we can't get the resolution. Okay, what's really happening is I just keep using sentences that start with you, basically. Well, you did this or you did that or you did this or you did that. That's why we're having this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to do what Jesus would ask us to do. If we are having a problem, I need to start off with a sentence that says, you know, we seem to keep getting stuck in this pattern. Not you are doing it wrong. We keep getting stuck in this pattern. And when that's true, Jesus said, the thing to do, once I see that we, me and you, are in that pattern, that I'm supposed to not see the speck in my brother's eye, but start with the log in my own eye. And so if me and you are in a struggle, and you're not the bad one, but me and you have a pattern in our relationship that doesn't work, so first of all, I have to claim that. I don't blame it on you. I claim the truth, which is me and you seem to have a conflict. And then I need to be willing to start with my question, okay, and what is my half of that conflict?
Mm-hmm.
What's my half of what keeps that icky conversation going?
Ooh. Taking responsibility. All right. We're going to continue the conversation after the break. If you have a question for Dr. Glenn Pickering, give us a call at 1-877-933-2484, especially if you find yourself in the game of tag and you'd like to get out of it. Today's the day you can do that. So you're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson, and we are having a great day. I hope you are too. We'll be right back.
In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. When the sails are torn, your love surrounds.
The childhood game of tag is awfully fun. The adult game, the adult version is not fun, and we're trying to figure out how to identify it, break it down, and stop doing it because it does become an obstacle for people to be in a right relationship with others. And so we're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering today. We're talking about his book, Playing Tag, The World's Most Common Game. And Glenn, just to start off the second half hour, I've got a caller on the line. I'd like to bring Matt onto the show. Matt, you have a question for Dr. Glenn.
Yeah, when when my wife and I get stuck playing this game of tag, I tend to just, like, shut down, and it just really frustrates my wife that she feels like I'm not really there anymore, and it takes forever then to kind of get me unstuck. I just wondered if you had any advice for me.
Yes. One of the things that's really helpful is to say that it's happening, and here's what I mean. So let's say you're having one of those tape playing conversations and you're starting to feel bad. You're starting to feel like you're the one that's it. And honestly, all of us, our knee-jerk reaction, if we get to the feeling like we're it, is we do one of two things. We either lash out and we make the other person it, or we shut down, just like you were talking about. We will do one of those two things if we feel like we're being criticized or judged or made to feel bad about ourselves. We lash out or we shut down. So when she says, that's frustrating to me when I see you shut down because it feels like you're not there, I think that's not a feeling. You're not. That's reality. You're not there. And so the question is, okay, how do we get unstuck? And here's the beauty. Anytime you feel that you can feel yourself shutting down, you get to say any of these sentences that are helpful to you. I feel like I'm it. Once you both understand the game a little bit. Or you can just say the literal factual truth. I can feel myself starting to shut down.
Okay.
So that is helpful.
Or even to just say, I think we're doing it again.
And just calling it out.
Exactly. Because okay. Here's the really cool thing. Once I name it, I'm not shut down.
That's true.
And we're not going to keep in the same conversation.
Mm.
Now, here's one caution, though, before you practice this. If you're not careful, you'll just play tag about playing tag. So same with my wife, and she does something that makes me feel bad or like I'm mad or like seems critical. And I say, you just made me feel bad. You're playing tag. No, you're just making me it. Well, see, I'm playing tag against her about the fact that she's playing tag. Which, honestly, goodness, is actually our knee-jerk reaction. So we have to be careful. If I feel like I'm it, I'm going to say to my wife, honey, I'm starting to feel like I'm it. Notice I'm not judging her. I'm not saying anything about her. I'm just telling her that's what's happening for me.
I think that's really interesting, Glenn. And Matt's going to be able to show his wife that he's staying present in the moment and he's got some self-awareness as to what's going on.
Right.
So that's great.
Right.
All right.
And then I would ask you to coach her to say this and then to say to her, and then it's her job to say, okay, thank you for telling me. What do you need?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay, Glenn.
And you probably just need to know that you're okay or that she still likes you, or maybe you just need to say what you're saying and not be judged or whatever that is. And then you guys can get back on track in about 45 seconds, I promise you.
That's awesome. That's great. And Matt, thanks for the call. All right, Glenn, let's get back into some of the lies and the destructive effects of the game. Lie number six is choosing love makes you too vulnerable. And, of course, the consequence is going to be constant fear, and nobody likes that.
Right. But I think the whole game is ruled by fear. And if you watch people play the game, it's just like I said to Matt, we're either lashing out so we look angry, or we're shut down so we look bitter and resentful. But honestly, either way, all we're actually feeling is anxious, afraid, like, oh my gosh. And so we lash out to make the other one it because we're afraid that we're it, or we shut down because we don't want to get criticized anymore because we're already feeling like we're it. But both of those are about being fearful. So, which takes all the joy out of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see all the time is that if I'm continually worried about whose fault it is or about protecting myself like we've been talking about or keeping everybody at a distance so I don't get hurt, there is no joy in my life. And since that's supposed to be one of the goals of life, I always think to myself that the two surest signs of God's presence are peace and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I put myself in a position in life where I really never feel joy, it is literally very hard for me to ever experience God's presence. Well, that's crummy. And I will never feel the joy then of being connected to God and to other people, because everything we call joyful is really about connecting. I'm connecting to the earth, I'm connecting to my kid, I'm connecting to the environment, I'm connecting to my God, I'm connecting to my friends. Everything we call joy is we're having an experience of connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
So if I live my life so I'm never connected, I don't have any joy in my life. And that's just painfully sad.
Mm. Yeah, so every form of tag is really, in your opinion, just driven by fear. And fear,
absolutely,
at the end of,
yeah,
the day, is going to eliminate any chance for a relationship being right.
Right.
Yeah.
I will never be in a right relationship with people I'm afraid of.
Because
if there's people in my life I'm afraid of, so I either lash out or I shut down, well, I can't be in a right relationship with someone who I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm. So if you notice yourself being critical or judgmental or defensive, and you've got unresolved arguments, and you've got indecisiveness or passivity, and you're feeling,
right,
a fair amount of loneliness, and you have anxiety,
right,
there is a pretty good chance you've got tag going on in your relationships.
Right, to the extent that it's starting to take over your life.
Mm-hmm. And if that's someone today and they want to take action, what's the first step they might want to take?
That's a really great question. So let me, there are actually a lot of things we can do, and any of them are helpful to us. Sometimes people are like, oh, Glenn, what's the one right thing to do? And,
mm-hmm,
I think, honestly, anything that breaks us out of the game is helpful to us. So notice I was talking to Matt about what, if you're in the conflict, you can just say, I'm starting to feel like I'm it, because that will actually break you out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
A second thing that, from a Christian perspective, is so important. See, I only play the game because I'm fearful that I'm not good enough. And I don't want anybody to find out. Just like once Adam and Eve were ashamed because they thought there was something wrong with them, then they wanted to hide themselves, hoping God wouldn't find out. So they,
mm-hmm,
hide themselves with fig leaves. They hide themselves behind a tree, hoping God won't find them, which, that's hilarious to me.
Right.
I'm hiding behind a tree, so the God of the entire universe won't know I'm here.
So when people come to you, I'm not speaking about you personally, but in relation,
mm-hmm,
in relationship, when people come to you and they have trouble,
mm-hmm,
and you say that they don't need you to know the right answer, they need you to be the right answer.
Right.
And I love that line, but I'm not entirely sure what it means.
Well, what I think is especially true of us guys, although I know women can do it too sometimes. Somebody comes to us, our wife, our friend, our partner in business, our ministry partner, who knows what. And instantly, while we're listening, we're starting to think, okay, how can they fix this? What should I tell them? What advice should I give them? How could they take care of this? In other words, we switch into fixer mode.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but that's so incredibly unhelpful to the other person, because here's what I know. A person is going through a real difficult time. Part of what's hard about that difficult time is they feel alone, like nobody really gets it. Well, if I'm supposed to be listening and letting them know I'm really with them and that I get it, if instead of doing that, I'm just thinking about a fix or a solution or what to tell them, see, I'm actually just reinforcing that part of them that thinks they are alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm trying to be helpful, but honestly, I'm becoming incredibly unhelpful. So as guys especially, we think, you know, we want to come up with the answer, but it's important to understand, no, our being there with them, our listening, our caring, our being present, is the answer. That's exactly what that person actually needs, is to be in relationship with someone who cares about the fact that they're going through that hard time.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that they're going to walk away with, remembering,
yes,
how you made them feel.
Right.
Yeah.
I promise you, nobody's going to remember our advice, but they're going to remember that we care, that we're,
yeah,
there, that we listened, that they matter to us.
Even doing that sounds a little risky, because I imagine the person saying, hey, I met with Bill and talked to him about my troubles. He just sat there like a stump and didn't say anything.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, so it's important to understand, if I'm listening, but thank you for saying that, because that's a good thing to be remembering.
Uh-huh.
If I really am listening, I'm not going to be a stump. I'm going to have a lot of very short answers. Oh, okay. Oh, you're right. Oh, man, that seems really hard. Oh, man. And then what happened? Oh, golly. You know what I mean? I'm going to be listening. I'm going to be reacting. I'm just not going to be giving advice.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, one of the things that we need to have in primary relationships is to feel like we're part of a team, right?
Right.
Because if you feel like you're alone and you have to keep yourself safe, then you're really not on a team. And
right.
Teams can say, what can we do to make things better?
Right.
What can we,
exactly,
do to change the,
right,
situation?
Yep.
And you say in your book, in community, you keep each other safe.
Right. That's,
oh,
part of what I was talking about before break. See, all by ourselves, all of us are incredibly vulnerable. That's why those other species died out, just like that Christian sociologist was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We literally keep each other safe. When we go through a hard time, let's say somebody close to me dies. here's what nobody in my community wants me to do. Go off in a corner and grieve by myself.
Right.
My community's going to want me to come to church and ask for prayers, and we're going to have a funeral, and people are going to come, and they're going to bring me food afterwards and take care of me and ask me how I'm doing, and somebody's going to come over and mow my yard for me, and somebody else is going to come over and bring food because they want me to know, we're with you through this, we care about you, you're not alone with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps me safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't make myself think I'm not alone.
Right, right. Okay, Glenn, one of the things that completely jumped off the page of your book was this line, and I want you to talk about it, and that is, judgment never leads to transformative change.
Right, you know? And I love that Susie has it on her show that this is not about information, it's about transformation.
Yes.
Which I think, wait, so if we're trying to get our relationships right, we're always being asked to transform our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm judgmental to somebody, like let's say, for example, somebody comes up to me and says, Glenn, I can't believe it. You did this wrong. You did that wrong. Blah, 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 blah. In my mind, because I feel attacked, I start wanting to defend myself, and I come up with all the reasons / excuses for why I did it the way I did it, which means I'm now locked into defending that way instead of being open to any other way,
mm-hmm.
which means I'm never going to learn how to do it differently. There will be no transformation. In fact, I now get more hardened in the way that I did it already.
Mm-hmm. So let's
Apostle Paul, go ahead.
No, I mean, I just want to say, let's be clear, being judgmental is never helpful.
Right, never. In fact, I promise you, every single time it will have the opposite effect. It will make that person less likely to change, less likely.
But it's the one thing that seems to be the easiest thing to do based on
flawed
human nature.
Yep, it is the easiest thing to do. But here's what I see. No, in all the call narratives in the scriptures where God or an angel comes down to somebody to talk to them, they never say, hey, I came all the way down here to tell you, keep doing what you're doing. keep taking the easier route. That's what I want for you.
Yeah.
Nobody comes to me and says, hey, Glenn, I had this powerful prayer experience. God has given me a calling, and I'm just supposed to keep doing things the easy way.
Yeah, that's so true. So true.
Right. So it is very easy to be judgmental. It's very easy to give advice, and it's incredibly not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that jumped off the page was this. We do not grow in our faith by eliminating our problems. We grow in our faith by using our gifts.
Right. So just like we said earlier in the show, if I'm in a tag playing environment, I don't really like to claim my calling because then I'll be criticized because it's going to seem big. It's going to seem ridiculous. People are going to think, really? You can do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, with God's help, I can do anything. So I don't want to claim it. Now, so say that quote back to me again because I want to say it exactly right.
We do not grow in our faith by eliminating our problems. We grow in our faith by using our gifts.
Right, because here's the thing. If all I'm trying to do is eliminate my problem, like let's say I don't want to get judged, I don't want to get criticized, I don't want people to think badly of me, you know what the best thing to do is?
What?
Nothing.
I thought that was going to be the answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to grow in my faith. I'm just protecting where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm really afraid of being criticized, so I just don't want to do it wrong, and so I try to eliminate any mistakes so nobody can ever be critical about me, I will not grow in my faith in the least. But if I listen to God's calling and listen to what God's asking me to do now at this point in my life, and it's going to be big, it's going to take me out of my comfort zone, it's going to require the help of all kinds of people around me, it's going to push me to grow in amazing sorts of ways I couldn't even have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't do transformation by trying to eliminate my mistakes. I am transformed by God in amazing ways the instant I say yes to my calling.
Yeah. Yeah.
That will transform it. It will require my transformation to even do the calling.
Mm-hmm. So we grow in our faith by using our gifts. I love that.
Right.
When Susie needed a week off, I said, hey, I'll fill in for her. And a lot of people pointed and laughed. But you know what? I'm still here anyway. So we'll take a little break.
When we come back,
one more segment with Dr. Glenn Pickering. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back. Great conversation today with Dr. Glenn Pickering. He's written a book called Playing Tag, the World's Most Common Game. And when you play tag, you're in you're not going to be in a right relationship, and we're going to help you today identify what it is and how to stop it. And Glenn, I've saved the last 15 minutes for some of the big heavy artillery coming out here, and this is one that is a big one for me, and it says, the mere fact that you love someone will not change their life. The fact that you love them and they know it will change their life.
Right.
And I think I had to read that a couple times because we oftentimes love people, but we don't let them know that we love them.
Right. And honestly, then it doesn't even matter to them. I mean, in terms of whether it affects their life or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about this, it's true. Even it's true in our human relationships. It's true in our divine relationships. So, I mean, when people say, okay, well, Glenn, I became a Christian on a certain day, it's really important to understand, God didn't start loving me that day.
Mm-hmm.
I finally understood that God loved me on that day.
Mm-hmm.
I finally experienced that God loved me on that day. So the fact that people love us doesn't matter. The fact that God loves me doesn't matter. Until I can experience that love or know it to be true, once that's true, that changes my life. But until that's true, really, it doesn't have any impact on me. So if I'm thinking great thoughts about my wife, and I go, she's so pretty, she's so fun, she's so smart, she's so great, and I never say those things to her,
mm-hmm.
so I'm just silently in my corner by myself, she might very well be thinking, because we're all human, oh, Glenn's mad at me, that's why he's not talking to me. So here I'm thinking these great thoughts, and she's thinking I must be upset with her. So again, not only then am I not having a positive effect on her life, I'm actually having a negative effect on her life.
So true.
But if I just say those things out loud that I'm already thinking, then she's like, oh, Glenn, you're so great. You're such a great husband, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so many guys, they say to me, well, Glenn, I'm not a romantic kind of guy. And I think you don't have to think anything else. You don't have to feel anything else. You just have to get better at what's saying what you actually already think out loud.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Glenn, let me ask you this. And this is kind of a big one, a little complicated. Okay. So this will take some explanation on your part. To not ask for what you want is selfish and disobedient.
Right.
You need some.
Because let's say there's something I want, and Jesus said, "Great, Matthew 7. Then great, you're supposed to come before God and say, God, here's what I want, and we're supposed to believe then that God will start caring for us. We'll start making those things happen all around us. That's how it's supposed to go. Knock and the door shall be opened unto you.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't go before God and ask for what I want, who am I saying to myself is going to get those things for me?
Mm.
I think it's me, right?
Right.
And at that moment, see, I have the wrong person on the throne.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's the same in our human relationships. See, if I'm not willing to talk to people about what I need, believing that, really, remember, it's in our community that keeps me safe. It's my relationships with other people that will help to accomplish all the things God has put on my heart. If I don't really get it, if I don't ask, then I'm really thinking I'm going to do that all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I know for sure. No, I will not.
Yeah, so to not ask or to not allow anyone else on your team, including God,
right.
to being on your team, really will return you to lie number one, which is you're going to be by yourself.
Right, exactly.
And that
and
feels
then,
scary.
Of having God's miracles flow through me and amazing things happen all around me, none of those things happen.
Mm-hmm. Because God really, literally loves to meet our needs, doesn't he? And we...
Right. Right.
I think we dream too small. We don't ask big enough, and that's a problem.
Right.
No. Okay. And then, you know, God says, "Ask and it should be given unto you." How often do we do a good job of saying, "I want to ask God for something for myself"? A lot easier
right.
to pray for other people.
Right. And, you know, it's a powerful thing to pray for other people, too. So I'm all about that. But I also think, yep, but if I'm not willing to pray for the things I need, what I'm telling myself is that I don't matter and I don't have my own calling, so I'm just here to pray for everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
But God says to me, no, Glenn, you do matter. You're precious to me, and you literally have a calling that only you can do.
I like it. I like it.
So if I say, well, I don't want to ask what I want, I feel selfish, blah, 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 then we need to understand we are literally being disobedient at that moment. We are not doing as God has specifically asked us to do.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, I've got a caller. We don't have a lot of time left, but I do have a caller on line one who wants to remain anonymous. Great. Welcome to the show.
All right.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show. I am a part-time personal care attendant for someone who
sure.
in a power wheelchair, but she can actually walk.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she plays tag a lot. One of the things is that everything has to be someone else's fault. So whatever goes wrong,
right.
She just accuses you of it. The other thing is that she always wants things done her way, a very specific
right.
way, but she won't tell you. And when I ask, she'll get sarcastic and she'll say, oh, no, let's do that tomorrow. So if I don't do it the way she wants, then she gets mad and angry. And if
right.
I ask her, do you want to do such and such next, then she gets sarcastic and I just feel very frustrated.
Right. So either way, she gets mad and angry, right?
Right.
Now, here's the funny thing, and you're going to think I'm really sarcastic, and sometimes I am, but not now. Here's the great thing. So no matter which way you do it, she's going to act mad and angry.
Right.
So you might as well do what you want.
It does sound sarcastic, even though I don't think it is.
Right. See, if I'm with somebody who, if I'm really direct with them about what I want, they're mean to me. And if I'm not, if I kind of pussyfoot around, they're mean to me. Well, I might just as well ask for what I want then, right? Because I'm going to get the same reaction either way.
Yeah.
So, and so if I have a thought about what I think might be good to do that day, and I'm you, I'm going to say, hey, today I was thinking we might do X, Y, or Z. What do you think? And they'll either say, okay, fine, or they'll be all critical. And I'm going to think, that's okay. Doesn't mean I did anything wrong. You're going to be critical no matter what.
Yeah.
So I might as well suggest the things that I think would actually be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for the call. I think we have, do we have time for one more? No, I guess we don't. Well, Glenn, I know there's this, every time we have this conversation, and you and I have talked about this before, and the whole idea that when you start exposing the game of tag, there's a lot of people listening today that went, uh-oh, I got problems because this is me and it's my relationship, and there's going to be people tonight, I think, after this conversation, feeling a little exposed. And what I would love for you to do is pray for the people that might feel a little vulnerable right now.
I think that's a terrific idea. I would love to do that. Is it okay if we do it right now?
I would think now is it could be a good time to do it.
Okay, great. Oh, dear Lord, we come before you with our hearts opened, our minds open to your leading and your gentle, gentle guidance. I would ask that everybody hearing these words today, Lord, just hears your words, that they're precious, that they're perfect in your sight, that they don't have to play tag, they don't have to prove that they're okay, because they're already okay. They're already good. They're already your children. They're already heirs to the promise, and that their only job is to live out the promise. So, Lord, I ask everybody who is listening today to just know this truth. They are precious to you beyond the telling of it. And they always will be. No matter what mistakes they make, they'll be precious in your sight. You will love them with a steadfast love. And that their only job is to live that love out in all of their relationships. I pray, Lord, that we all know that we all be clear about it, that we all keep claiming that. In your name we pray.
Glenn, you know, I so appreciate you coming on the show today. I appreciate you sharing all the wisdom that you have on this subject. I know that you've been in private practice in Eden Prairie for over 30 years, and you talk about kind of the distillation process where after you talk to so many people, you can distill it down to a couple of key primary things that everyone struggles with a little bit. And it seems like this playing tag is certainly one that comes at the surface all the time, and you've done such a good job of helping us understand that we get into this cycle, and if we learn to expose ourselves for when we're doing it and communicate to the people that we love that this is going on, we can stop living in this fear. And once you start driving fear out of the relationship, you start to feel like you're in a right relationship with others.
That is so true. That is a perfect summary of what I think.
Okay. Now, I appreciate that. And then also, life's most dangerous question, I want to leave you with this. What do you want?
Right.
And that's what you need
it's
to think about.
It's the one question God has for, it's the one question God has every single one of
right.
us. What
right.
do you want?
And Glenn, you can be reached at www.tagfreeliving.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Can I give people my telephone number?
We'll put that on the website. How's that?
Great. Perfectly done.
Yeah, because you have to say it like four times for it to stick in anyone's brain. So. You know those commercials. You know the ones I'm talking about. All right. Thanks a lot, Glenn, for being on the show. And coming up in the second hour, Doing Good is Simple. It's a book written by Chris Marlowe, founder of Help One Now. We're going to have a great conversation with him. This is Live the Promise. We'll be back in a minute.